And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on this Good Friday. Thank you for joining us this morning as well. We'll be speaking with Senator John Campbell, Senate President Pro Tem, about the progress the Senate is making on in several areas, and then Representative Don Turner, House Minority Leader, about how he feels the job that the legislature is doing from a Republican perspective. And in the second hour, we'll take some of your phone calls, and I'll talk about that subject in a minute. And then we'll speak with Lisa Lynn, editor of Vermont Sports Magazine, about winter sports. You can still do them, even in late spring, and even after all the rain that we got today. So if you wish to join our conversation today, the number is 802-244-1777, or toll free at 877-291-8255. What I'd like to do is welcome to Open Mic, Senator John Campbell. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Great. Well, thank you for being on, Senator. The budget just passed the House, and in it, it has fees and taxes that add up to millions of dollars. Is the Senate going to go along with those, or what's sort of the process that you'll go through now?
Well, you know, we take a look at prior to their passing it. We have a general idea between the House and the Senate as to the number that we feel has to be reached to balance the budget. And then, of course, you knew it back in, you figure out what type of revenue that you would have to raise. You know, the one thing I must say about the House, because, you know, they usually get tagged with, you know, having a huge tax package and then a big budget. And the thing is, though, they go first, and that is difficult. It's always easy to sit back and you know, second guess. And so I think they have a tougher job than the Senate does. However, even with that said, we still have that job of making sure that if there are any other areas that we can either find cuts, reductions in state government, rather than raise revenue, that has always been my message as the president of the Senate, to try to find cuts. And I think if you look back over the past 6 years, we have done that every year consistently.
The House left out several items. One of the items was the governor's education proposal, putting money away for every child that's born in Vermont for higher education, and also money to fund a study of Vermont Health Connect. Is that something the Senate is interested in putting back?
Well, I think let's go to the first one. That is the, you know, for the savings account for all children who are born. I like the principle. I like the idea of being able to do anything that's going to assist any of Vermont's kids to be able to achieve a higher education. The question comes down to, you put it all in priorities. And right now, as you know, the budget shortfall we're looking at was somewhere between, depending on who you talk to, anywhere between $32 and $38 million. So we have to decide, I think, as a Senate, is what is our priority? Do we feel that this program would benefit enough people and to outweigh some of the other things that are on the table? And we do have other issues such as early childhood education, child care. You know, that there are a lot of families, as you know, especially single parent families, who are struggling just to be able to get to work, and because they're in need of child care. There are services for those people who are permanently disabled, or home care workers, and these are some of our most, I think, needed folks in the state. I know of several cases where, especially in my area, I have one young man who was rendered quadriplegic when he was 17 years old, and comes from a very poor family, and without some of the services that are provided here, he wouldn't even be able to have himself turned at a regular basis. So you have to, I think, Mike, what you want to do is you have to look at the priorities, and that's what we're going to do.
On the issue, what's driving the budget shortfall or gap, I guess you can say, is Medicaid.
Right.
And any reforms from the Senate side that you're looking at in terms of getting those Medicaid costs under control?
Well, I believe that Senator Ash is does have a few ideas. We've discussed a couple that, and I believe he will be rolling those out, discussing them at the end of the week, and or I should say at the beginning of next week. And I am going to allow him to be the person to discuss those. But, you know, quite honestly, let's face it, healthcare is the major driver in this, not just this state, but every state, I believe. And, you know, unless we get control of healthcare costs, we're never going to get away from this beast. And, you know, the Agency of Human Services is the one spot where all the rest of government basically feeds. And I don't want to say that in a pejorative sense that the agency is bad, because the agency does some incredible work. But they cover corrections, healthcare, our mental health issues, our DCF, and a few others. And that's actually why some of us believe that the organization should be reorganized, so that it's done, I think, in a more efficient manner.
And that reorganization would be splitting out the healthcare functions to a new agency called the Agency of Healthcare Administration, and keeping sort of the functions of child protection, corrections, and those sort of functions in the Agency of Human Services.
That's right. That's right. And because healthcare, again, it's huge, and it's going to continue to grow. And if we want to really be able to keep an eye on it, then it cannot be buried in a massive organization. Now, the opposing view is saying that, you know, we have integrated services, we want to be able to all work together, and we've worked a long time to get these. And I say, I'm more than happy to have a discussion with anyone, is that we are the state government, and our agencies should be working together anyway, or also departments, and that those departments, I do not see any reason why they cannot continue that working together and working in an integrated fashion.
One of the things is that bill moving. It's come out of the Senate Government Ops Committee, Operations Committee. It is in Appropriations Committee, I think, right now, isn't it?
No, actually, we passed it yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah, that was, and the reason you probably weren't aware is that we did have a day when it was back in, or when it was in Appropriations, so there was a gap, and so it didn't go normally as you would normally see on the calendar. So that's why you probably...
So it's over to the House now.
Actually, you're the fourth person today who asked who also thought it was still in the Senate, so...
One of the things that you did pass in this session was the marijuana legalization of marijuana bill. It is in the House now, and I spoke with the Speaker last week on this show, and he said they're going to take a few weeks to sort of take testimony and think about the direction that they're going in. And even if they don't pass it this year, that at least they'll have a direction they'll have for future years. What's your thought? Is this going to be passed this year or not?
I personally do not. I hope that it is not passed, because I do believe that there are problems with the bill. And let me say at the outset that I really don't care if somebody is in their house and they want to smoke a joint or smoke marijuana. I don't think it's that gateway drug to the next thing you're going to do is be shooting heroin or anything of that nature. But what I do have a problem with is that when you have a state government who clearly is trying to close holes in its financial deficiencies, that we're looking to make an illegal substance legal, I just think that is bad policy. And I also think that despite what the supporters say, this is not going to end the black market. I think this is will probably augment the black market. And then you also have to see who really are the people who are going to benefit from this. And it's not, you know, the guy out back who has 40 acres who probably has a few plots there from some pot. It's people from out of state. These big corporations are going to come in. They're going to be the manufacturers. They're going to be the distributors. I just think that it's not a wise decision at this time, and it's a terrible message to send when we're still facing an incredible opioid problem.
One of the things that we discussed when you were first on, we had you on in the beginning of the session, was the creation of an ethics commission or a ethics committee. Any progress in that area?
Yes, yes. And actually, I was here until about 8 last night trying to get that all wrapped up to where we'll be able to get that out. I believe our government operations committee, Senator White, will be voting that out today. There are two issues. One, there's an ethics committee, which would be one who would oversee statewide candidates. Then there's the ethics panel internally within the Senate, which we are, our rules committee will be voting on, I believe, the beginning of the week. It was just, we were doing is trying to make sure the mirror, what is in the, what we're requiring from the ethics committee being the statewide officers. We didn't want to require them to do something that we as a Senate were not willing to do ourselves.
We're speaking with Senator John Campbell, who's the Senate President Pro Tem. If you wish to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, the word budget gap is confusing. Hey, I think it means the 100 and...
Tom, we can't hear Fred. Can you start over again? And, Tom, can you boost him a little bit?
Okay.
Turn down his radio.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. The word budget gap is confusing. I assume it means that we're $130 million in debt. And so if we're $130 million in debt, that means that we have to borrow money somewhere to spend that money. Do we borrow that money from, say, the Bank of America? Where does the money come from?
Hi, Fred. Thanks for the question. And unfortunately, the Bank of America didn't want to loan us that money, but and I shouldn't be so light on that. But what happens, it's really what we call a shortfall, and I guess that's what you've...
It's called a budget gap.
It's a budget gap. So the governor presents his budget to the legislature at the beginning of the year. And in that budget, he tries to determine what actually is the priorities that he has. We know from our projections and, of course, from our joint fiscal office what the cost of government is today and what we expect it to be coming into the future. So we know pretty much what the cost will be, so we try to match that to say, okay, if we're spending X amount of dollars, we need to have enough revenue generated throughout the state to meet that. And, you know, one of the things also that many people don't realize in Vermont is that we're the only state in the nation that is not required to have a balanced budget by statute or by its constitution, yet we have consistently done so. I know that that's not it sounds good and is good, I think, from a fiscal standpoint, fiscal responsibility, but that doesn't alleviate the fact that we still are having upward pressures in our health care costs and also growing costs in state government itself.
So, Senator Campbell, the budget gap basically is, you know, the trajectory of state government spending and you know the trajectory of the revenues in order to cover that state spending, and the gap between the revenues and the expenditure trend is what is called the budget gap. And the reason, for example, that the House had passed some fee increases and tax increases is to match the revenue with the expenditures. Am I explaining that right?
In fact, if we could reverse that, like have that rewound, and I would give your answer, Mike, because I think that was more succinct, and that's because Mike was an integral part of the Douglas administration, and he was the one who always... General Doobie, good to see you. He was the one who always made sure that we had that balanced budget.
Any tax hikes on the horizon, like the carbon tax or beverage tax, like was sort of floated last year?
No, yeah, no pun intended with the floats, but now the carbon tax, I do not see that will be make it through. I don't think the beverage, the sugar sweetened tax, as they call it, will do that either. We changed that last year, and we've already made a conscious decision to increase the tax on beverages that contain sugar and
by expanding the sales tax.
And this one would do almost like put an excise tax on it, which I do not support.
One of the things last year was sort of gun control legislation. We spoke about it in the beginning of the session. You said you didn't foresee it. Is that still the case?
That's still the case, and I don't see it. There are still some people that are concerned about it. I know the Burlington, city of Burlington, they have a big concern, and the mayor Weinberger, he's been very active in trying to support and advocate for his state or his city and their desire to have a local ordinances. And it just did not. I don't think there was a. I don't want to. Appetite's a really bad word to use here, but there wasn't a lot of support in the House, I believe, starting out to revisit the issue. However, I believe the mayor and the city certainly should have their rights to discuss this and to determine, you know, where they're going to go in the future. So I think that I don't think that particular subject within that confines is over. I think that they'll continue to have that topic, that discussion, and that discussion will probably find its way back here at one point.
One of the things that that gun control legislation was in their charter change, that charter change never came out of the House committee,
exactly.
I remember correctly. Exactly. What are the priorities now of the Senate as you sort of are in the last third of the session?
My major priority is the budget, of course, and actually which kind of brought it back to the top of the hour when we started talking, is that I would like to bring that in under the amounts that have been talked or have been passed by the House. I would like to have the package, that the revenue package, whether it be fees or any other increases that we look to see if we can trim those down. Any time that we can save the taxpayers' dollars, then I feel like we have a successful session. So that's number one. Number two, we have energy bill that is currently getting ready to be voted out of appropriations, which deals with, a lot of it has to do with siting, and we're trying to make sure that local communities have a say in where they're going to be siting renewable projects, you know, some of these bigger solar arrays, where I believe that in the past that they have been denied that, and I think some of the developers have not been really good neighbors, and I think that they have created a scenario where it's been bad for those developers who are working closely with communities and finding places that they can put renewable energy sites, solar arrays or whatever. And that's what I am hoping and promoting, because if these developers continue to go in and just place them in areas where local communities find offensive, then I think that certainly will interfere with our continuation of developing solar and other renewable projects, which I think are extremely important in order for us to get off of the use of oil and other oil products.
Senator John Campbell, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here, and good luck. And again, you're doing a great job with the show, and I wish you the best of luck.
That's kind of you. Thank you very much. This is Open Mic.
Offers dental care for the whole family that is mercury and metal free? Central Vermont's most recommended dentists employ the safer technologies, like digital x-rays that can reduce radiation up to 90%. Along with family dentistry and an in-house denture lab, All Smiles features comprehensive orthodontics care with braces for children and adults. Learn more with a free consultation. Call All Smiles Dental Center on the Barrie Montpelier Road at 476-8700 or visit myvtsmiles.com. All Smiles, All Smiles.
Ah, spring. Well, that's what it was called before Honda's Dream Garage sales event. Now it's garage season. Hear that? That's the sound of a garage reaching greatness. Thank you, Honda, for allowing such beauty to exist.
Hurry in to the Honda Dream Garage sales event, where every 2016 vehicle has a standard rearview camera, and well-qualified buyers can get 0.9% APR on the 2016 CR-V.
Visit NorthCountryHondaDealers.com to find a Honda dealer near you.
See dealer for financing details.
Tired of grocery shopping at huge supermarkets with no personality? This is Tom Mihuron, and I invite you to shop our well-stocked, right-sized family market in Waitsfield. Custom-cut meats, fresh seafood and produce, gourmet cheeses, regular and organic groceries, and over 1,000 wines. Come and see Jeff and Bill in the meat department, Tana in produce, Gary in seafood, Nate in the deli, or Nancy and Liz in our incredible wine department. Family run for over 70 years. Mihuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
Do you want to learn more about products and services in the world of health, nutrition, fitness, sports, and quality care? Then come to the Berlin Mall this Saturday, March 26th, from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. The Radio Vermont Group and the Berlin Mall have teamed up to bring you this health and fitness expo. This Saturday, the Berlin Mall Center Court will feature a variety of health and fitness exhibitors. Come experience all the newest trends, shop their products, and gain valuable information to help you live a healthier life. You'll be able to meet with experts who can answer your questions. It's a great opportunity to find a variety of products and services all in one place and at the same time. The Health and Fitness Expo, this Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Berlin Mall. The Berlin Mall, easy to get to, just off I-89 at exit 7.
Welcome back to Open Mic. We're broadcasting from the Stay House. I'm Mike Smith, and it's my pleasure to welcome to Open Mic Representative Don Turner, who's the House Minority Leader. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on the show.
Last night, you passed a budget, a $5.77 billion budget. What did you think about it?
Very disappointed in the budget. And, you know, our caucus members, we voted against it. We had some very, you know, strict priorities. We heard loud and clear from Vermonters last election about the spending in Vermont, and it's out of control. So this budget, gross spending at 4%, it's an additional $58.8 million in spending, while revenue continues to lag and growing only at about 2%, which is about $30 million. So here we go again. We're spending way more than the revenue stream will allow. They raised $47.5 million in new taxes, and we look forward to next year, and we have the same setup that we've had the last 5 years, that a projected budget gap of over $30
million. So let me focus on the $47 million or so of taxes and fees. Some of them are fees, and some of them are taxes. What specifically didn't you like in that tax package, other than I gather the whole thing?
Yeah, we were unanimous. The caucus, we picked up some D's and I's on that. It was, I think, 59 people opposed that that revenue package. We were most offended by the employer assessment and the gross receipts tax. We believe that this gross receipts increase is...
And that was on fuel oil.
That's fuel oil, home heating fuel, propane. This is the backdoor carbon tax, or this is the start of the carbon tax. They chose to exempt or exclude electricity if you use that to heat your home. But if you heat your home with any other type of fossil fuel, they increase the tax. This is carbon tax 101, I believe. So that was very offensive to our caucus. The other thing that we found, really, you know, we hear all the time fees are not taxes and taxes are not fees. Well, fees can be taxes if the legislature chooses to create exemptions to allow them to be. And this new $20.8 million mutual fund tax, they're calling it a fee. They gave the Department of Finance and Regulation the exemption now to call it a fee when it truly is a tax, a tripling of the previous fee that was charged to mutual funds. So this whole package was very offensive. They also started taking receipts, a bank franchise fee, which will cost jobs. I've talked to the Bankers Association. This new tax is on top of, it's directed to the top five largest banks in the state that do business in the state. What that means, they can't really change their rates. They're gonna make up that expense by cutting jobs. We hear it, we know it. And it's a direct impact on the economy. So, you know, again, one of our priorities was to grow the economy, which would resolve some of this spending issue. I mean, if we had more revenue, we wouldn't have to keep raising taxes and doing stuff. But we keep burdening Vermonters and Vermont businesses with all these thousand cuts. And we got to stop doing it, and we got to grow the economy.
One of the things that's driving the budget, of course, is Medicaid. What's your caucus's opinion of how to get Medicaid expenditures under control?
We have looked at this a lot. You know, one of the ways that we've been looking at, and we brought to the majority last year, Mike, a proposal. Right now, if people are on Medicare, they get their supplemental insurance from Medicaid. They're called duals, dual enrollments. We did some research with JFO and a bunch of other agencies, groups, and we found that if the state were to buy private insurance instead of offering Medicaid to people that are on Medicare, the savings could be as much as $17 million a year. We brought that to the majority last year. They ignored it. They totally ignored it. Last night, they adopted. We brought it back. We brought it to the floor as an amendment last night. Representative Dame, who's been doing the work on this, brought it to the floor. And I'm happy to report today that that is in the budget, that they're actually going to look at this. And we know there's significant savings potential if they go forth and do this.
What, a couple of things that weren't in the budget that was interesting to me. The governor's education proposal was not in the budget. Also, money to fund a study on Vermont Health Connect. As you remember, there was a consultant that said, stop everything that you're doing with Vermont Health Connect and study it before you move forward anymore. But there wasn't any money in the budget. Were there other things that you were... Can you, first of all, can you talk about those two specific things? And were there other things that you are wanted in the budget or didn't want in the budget?
Sure. Well, I want to speak to the piece that you're talking about, Vermont Health Connect. Vermonters are screaming for help. This is a mess. It has been for 3 years. This majority, this governor, keeps saying it's working. They keep ignoring it. We've asked for oversight. We've done all kinds of stuff. We've had amendment after amendment rejected. So I'm happy to report the healthcare put some language in the budget that was unanimous, but the appropriation people didn't fund it. So basically there's language but no money. We brought an amendment to the floor last night with their language that was approved by their committees, put in the budget, and we supplemented or substituted money that they were putting in other studies to fund this. It was rejected by the majority. Their language was rejected. We had the money. They continue to ignore and put this off. It's very disappointing. I think Blue Cross Blue Shield is asking for it. Everybody's asking for it. It cost, we heard last night, $14.8 million in state dollars to continue operating this thing, and it's failing. It's failing miserably, and Vermonters are suffering. We had the amendment. They could have easily accepted it. The money was there. They ignored it, and I don't know if they're really going to take it up or not. So that's a disappointment.
The governor's education proposal was not in the budget. Did you support that proposal or not?
Was this the one where Step Up?
Yes, where you fund Vermonters who are born in Vermont with a certain amount of money.
Oh, the scholarship.
Scholarship money.
No, we did not support that. We did support last year. The governor brought this to the legislature last year, and the premise that we supported it last year was that this was going to be funded by private dollars. There was a large company that had committed an X number of dollars to put into this fund. We thought there was value in that, and I think everybody, our caucus did anyway, and we supported it. And then lo and behold, this year he comes back and he says, oh no, we're going to put state dollars into these scholarships. So every baby born in Vermont, to average income families, we get $250. For low income families, we get $500. We can't afford it. We just can't support it. We actually took a position, Mike, that we didn't want any new programs or expanding programs until we get this ship turned in the direction, bend the curve on spending. That's why we took that position.
We're speaking with Representative Don Turner, who's the House Minority Leader. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. We mentioned the Vermont Health Connect, but healthcare in general seems to be something that at least in the beginning of the session, everybody said had to be addressed. Is there anything going on in that direction?
There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of talk in this building. There's a healthcare committee continues to talk about things. They put out bills that are good, feel good bills, but I don't see a significant move by the majority or the governor to really get healthcare under control. And our caucus has been saying, let's take a time out. This government, this administration, have really put healthcare and turned it upside down. And people that have commercial insurance, and we expanded Medicaid to a third of the population of the state. We keep finding more and more expenses with that Medicaid proposal. So we've got to take a time out in healthcare. And that's kind of what we've been proposing, is just stop. Let's let things settle down. Let's see where we are. Let's see who we have covered, who we don't have covered, besides Vermont Health Connect, which has to be done now. And I believe that we need to either move to the federal exchange or move to some other kind of state-federal partnership. And I think we also need to remove the mandate. We got to let people buy insurance where they can buy it. They still would have to buy products that are ACA approved. I don't see the harm in it, but this administration has refused in the past. So we got to continue to push that issue. It's just very frustrating. One of the things that was in the budget that we tried to remove the funding was there's a study in the budget that was $160,000 to look at expanding Dr. Dinosaur. It's called Dr. Dinosaur 2.0. So we're going to spend $160,000 of state dollars that we don't have, we're saying we don't have, unless we raise new taxes, to study whether we can put more people on to Dr. Dinosaur. It doesn't even make sense to me when we can't even take care of the people we have.
We're speaking with Representative Don Turner, who's the House Minority Leader. If you have a comment or question or an opinion, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Dick in Northfield. Dick, you're on open mic.
Yeah, does this fellow you're talking to, does he know that I heard him saying something about people that's on Social Security, Medicare? And mm-hmm. so on. Does he know that we paid for that since 1963, ever since we was working? This isn't a gift from them. This is paid for already, way back from starting in 1963. Does he know that?
Well, let me ask you that. Yeah, Don, let me ask this question. I mean, the caller is asking about Medicare. I don't think you're saying let's eliminate Medicare.
Oh, absolutely not. I'm a proponent not to touch Medicare at all. That's why I'm very leery of the all-payer system. I agree with the caller that Vermont should not be messing with people's Medicare that they paid for, just like this caller says. My concern is that the Medicaid piece, which is paid by Vermont taxpayers, we are supplementing some people's Medicare with a supplemental program through Medicaid, which cost the state millions and millions of dollars. We looked at a proposal where the state could buy private insurance to supplement their Medicare, which would save the state millions of dollars. That's the plan.
And you're looking at this basically as a way to make sure that you have the same program in place, but at a lower cost.
Absolutely. Actually, in some cases, we would enhance people's coverage at a lower cost. But we wouldn't do anything until we looked at it. And like you said, we brought this to the majority a year ago, and they didn't bring it up. They wouldn't even touch it. Last night, we got them to accept it in an amendment on the floor budget.
We're speaking with Representative Don Turner, who's the House Minority Leader, and we would welcome your phone calls at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We'll continue our discussion with Representative Don Turner in just a moment. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith, and we're broadcasting today from the State House. We're speaking with Representative Don Turner, the House Minority Leader, and of course, your phone calls are always welcome at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Don, we were talking about the budget and the fact that it passed last night the House. It's headed over to the Senate. what would you have done differently?
Well, we would have just stuck to the intent that we were told by the majority last year. And that would have been to create an expectation that all proposed budgets and new programs would have a multi-year cost analysis. Let's look at these things over more than 1 year. The other thing is, we were told last year that they were going to focus the budget on the existing revenue source, that we should, going forward, focus on how much projected revenue we have and budget based on that versus creating a bunch of expenses and then figure out how to fill the gap. So that was the second thing. The third thing is, in future years, we wanted a multi-year approach to the budget. Let's start looking at for more than 1 year so we can start to put things like business does in balance. You know, we know that we're going to have an up year next year, we do this. So budget like that. And the last thing was to build reserves in the out years. So those are things that just they told us last year was going to happen because we kept pushing them. They totally ignored them in this budget, and it's very disappointing.
We're speaking with Representative Don Turner, the House Minority Leader. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Sam in Williston. Sam, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to give you some rapid-fire quick questions here. Now that we have the paid sick leave, and it, my understanding, it does carry into the next year. So this is a burden. I never heard them talking about this when they were putting it, but when I read the laws, it looks like it is going to go, it can carry over to the next year, just like a state or federal employee into the private sector. Number two, we seem to have the Federal Labor Board doing quite a bit of work within the state borders these days. We have a federal, we have a state labor board that's supposed to be doing work here and being paid for. If the feds are going to be taking over here, why are we paying? Why are we paying for a state board? And my third question is: American Express spends 3% of its take on auditing. How much does the state spend on auditing tax revenue?
Thank you, Sam, for your phone call. Don, let's go to the last question first. How much, the caller wants to know, are we spending enough on auditing our programs?
I don't believe we are. I think we spend an awful lot of money in the state, and I don't think we have enough checks and balances in place to make sure that that money is going to the mission that it was designed to do. One of the things that our caucus has been trying to figure, we've been talking about, is getting the state government to really refine its mission. Let's go back, even start with the Constitution. What is government supposed to be doing? Because what it feels like for me is that the majority here in the Shumlin administration have driven us that we need to be everything to everybody forever. And financially, a state of 600,000 people, we can't afford to do that. So I would agree with the caller that we probably should look at that and look for more money for auditing.
Paid sick leave, it's an ongoing expense for businesses, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's an ongoing expense. Our caucus fought it very hard because of those things. It's another small attack on small business in this Vermont.
But if you look at every poll there is, yep, including the Doyle poll, including the, yep, Castleton Institute poll, it's very popular. What do you say to those people that say, well, we need this?
And I don't disagree. I mean, I've had people say, well, I don't get this at my work. The problem is, until we make the environment in the state more business friendly, where businesses can prosper so the employees can prosper, we can't keep putting more and more burdens on the employer. And that's what we're doing.
One of the last things that the caller had talked about was the labor board versus the state board. I'm not sure I understand that aspect of it. But
I don't understand that at all, and I apologize to the caller.
Okay, let's go to the phone line. Terry in Springfield. Terry, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Don, I remember meeting you at the Wayside Restaurant a few years ago at one night of the farm show, along with Cynthia Martin, who, of course, was our rep. A couple of things. I haven't heard a word about whether we're balancing the budget with these increased taxes and income that's been proposed. Have you had any knowledge of how that's working?
I can speak to that. The budget you're going to hear is balanced. But what I'm telling you is that if you take the budget and you look to next year, we're going to have another $30 million hole. So I argue that the budget is not balanced. The only way that we're going to address the problem in Vermont is to make some structural cuts to the spending. And this majority does not get that. They think that raising revenue is the only answer. They raised about $45 million last year. They're raising $49 million, $48 million this year. And yet we still have a $30 million problem going forward. So the answer is they will say it's balanced. I disagree.
Well, is this the new norm where we, without the structural changes, that we're going to have to raise taxes every year to close that budget gap?
Yes. I think that you will look, if we play this out and we continue in the same path, that's the answer, is they're going to have to raise taxes every year, every year. The caveat is that's as long as the economy keeps growing. If we were to slip into even a very slight recession, we have a very, very serious problem in Vermont. And then when we look back at this last winter, I believe, based on the projections on revenue, we might even see a rescission of this fiscal budget before we're done because of the shortage in revenue that caused by the warmer weather and the down revenue.
Let's go back to the phones. Jesse from Worcester. Jesse, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. A little off subject, more of the Medicaid type questions. Being a person with late stage Lyme disease, and I've been in the doctor's circle, if you will, here in Vermont for a good 3 years. And with Lyme disease becoming more of an epidemic and people coming out of the woodwork, I'm curious if there's any studies going on in the state with all the money being spent, this would be a good area. In terms of educating our doctors and I guess just medical people in terms of helping people with Lyme and getting proper treatment, as it's been an absolute nightmare for myself. And just wondering if anything's being done, doctors need education themselves. I've had, you know, four specialists say that they are not versed in it, and they do not have the education to address it, one thing being the CDC and having to follow their guidelines, but more studies finding that they are very, very behind in terms of proper testing and recognizing the debilitating effects of Lyme disease. And I guess, just to summarize my question, is there anything being done to help those, maybe in this specific category, because it is kind of a new disease in a way, to help them?
Jesse, thank you for the phone call. That, you know, that's probably a timely question. I don't know if we'll have the answer for it, but it's a timely question because we had a mild winter, and people are worried that it didn't kill off the ticks that carry the Lyme disease. From your perspective, any sort of thing going on in terms of preventing Lyme disease or money in the budget to sort of do an outreach to educate about Lyme disease?
I am aware of no money to address this particular issue. You know, I'm sorry to hear about the cholera's illness. I know that that's you hear more and more awareness about Lyme disease and so on, and I'm very sorry to hear that. I know that the year before we passed a bill to at least acknowledge Lyme disease and its effects. So I do think there's some awareness, not to the level that the caller speaks to. And I'm, again, sorry to hear about his illness.
The legalization of marijuana passed the Senate. In the House, spoke to the Speaker last week. He said the House is taking a few weeks to look at it. What's going to happen with that bill?
Well, I hope that it's going to die in the House. Our caucus has done some informal polling, and there's not really any support in our caucus for legalization of marijuana. We have, a lot of people involved in, you know, public safety, myself being, you know, fire and rescue chief. This is an issue I can't support. I mean, I work very closely with law enforcement. They have a very difficult job already. We have this huge opiate problem that has all kinds of other issues arising from that, and yet we want to rush passing legalizing a new drug. I don't understand the reality, the reasoning, or the need, or even the desire to do so. We'd be the first in the Northeast. I think that eventually marijuana will probably be legal in Vermont, and I'm not even concerned about that, but I don't think we need to be the first in the Northeast. I don't think we need to do it this year, and I hope that there'll be a lot more thoughtful discussion with all the stakeholders involved in this.
I think it's in the Judiciary Committee, if I remember
it
correctly.
It is. It's in Judiciary.
And one of the questions I have, you have members in Judiciary
Yes.
Committee. Are they going to support it or not support it?
No, they're not supporting it. Okay. We are working hard to, hold that position, and we will continue to do that as we work through the rest of this session.
And what is the prospects of that coming, or what you're hearing, the prospects of that coming out of the Judiciary Committee?
Well, right now, I mean, it didn't have a very positive vote at all. I mean, they did some informal polling. I know they're going to do some more testimony and stuff next week. My hope is it never gets out of Judiciary. Once it gets out of there, I think it's on a little bit faster track. So the best hope for us to oppose it is to keep it in Judiciary, keep asking the questions, keep bringing in the stakeholders, and hopefully it stays there through the rest of this session.
There's been talk of an ethics commission. We talked about that in the beginning of the session. I went back and looked at my notes at some of the questions I asked you. You had no problem supporting an ethics commission. Any progress on that, or do you know?
I haven't heard any. I mean, in the House, we did some rules a few years ago, or a couple of years ago, and we do have done the first step, I think, in that role, in that move toward more ethics. The Senate's doing some work on it now, and I remain committed to that. I think people deserve to understand where your allegiances are, where you support outside of this building. And, you know, I had a question yesterday about should there be financial disclosures. You know, and I'm not sure about that. I mean, I don't mind disclosing my own, but, you know, why should my wife have to because I'm an elected official? Maybe some threshold where, you know, if you receive a certain amount of your income from a certain entity that you should disclose that. I'm all for that. But I know in my filing with the Speaker's office, I was very clear to spell out every board I sit on, every job I have, every piece of, you know, potential conflict. I want to make sure people understand where my allegiances are. As I just said, with public safety, I'm a fire and rescue chief. There's no way I can support marijuana. I want people to understand why.
You had spoke earlier about the fact that the House last night passed a spending package, tax and fee package, that it was roughly $48 million. Do you see any other taxes on the horizon that the House is looking at?
Well, you're going to hear about the transportation piece that's coming next week, which is $10.5 million, which is included in that $48 million.
It's about $9 million of it, isn't it?
Well, it's $10.5 million now.
Okay.
There was a bill that passed that, you know, eliminated people from paying suspended license fees. It was about $1 million that got added to that, so it's about 10.5 now. I hope that we're not going to see any more. My goal, where our caucus is going now, is to the Senate and continue our work to reduce these taxes and show the senators where they can find some savings that, you know, unfortunately our colleagues here in the House were reluctant to take and run with.
What's going to be your priority here in the remaining third of the legislative session?
We're going to continue. We need some economic development. I mean, we believe very firmly that, number one, we got to deal with Vermont Health Connect. That's got to be it. Our primary focus was reining in spending. The budget's gone now. We did everything we could. We'll go to the Senate, keep fighting that. The second thing, well, this Vermont Health Connect. We got to get that straightened out. We're going to force that issue every chance we get. And then the third thing will be to promote economic development so that people can afford to continue doing business and offering good jobs for the future.
Representative Don Turner, who's the House Minority Leader, thank you very much, Don, for being on Open Mic today.
Thank you very much for having me, Mike.
And thank you for listening. In our second hour coming up, we'll open up the phone lines for all of you. I have a couple questions I want to ask, including, do you think we should have term limits for members of Congress? And then we'll get off politics a little bit, and we'll talk with Lisa Lynn, editor of Vermont Sports. She'll be calling in. And, you know, winter activities are still going strong, even though the rain today would make you think otherwise. And, of course, we'll talk with our friends at Talk Media News. We'll check in with what's going on in Washington. Also, if you ever want to hear portions of this broadcast or the whole broadcast, all you have to do is go onto our website, which is wdevradio.com, and click on the Open Mic icon, the podcast, Open Mic podcast icon, and pick any show that you want to hear or rehear. You can do that. So coming up, Lisa Lynn, editor of Vermont Sports, and your phone calls. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the original Pioneer, AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond, and of course, streaming worldwide, as I said, at WDEVradio.com. And I know there's some of you listening in Europe right now to this broadcast. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. This time of day, we usually check in with our friends at Talk Media News, and on the line this morning is our own Ellen Ratner. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, and I just want to remind people that you can still give somebody a beautiful goat for Easter. We'll gift you a certificate, and the goat, of course, goes to somebody in South Sudan. It doesn't arrive at your house. GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. That's GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. We'll get you a certificate by Easter. But meanwhile, and I am going to South Sudan next week, I don't know that you'll hear from me from there, but I'll be back the following week. So I just want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Brussels. Secretary Kerry was over there. He said two Americans died. They weren't the brother and sister that were on their way to New York. It looks like there may have been two other Americans, but they were New York-based, but they were not American citizens. But apparently there are two Americans that may have been killed, although the names have not been released. But there are two people that they have not found.
And he announced that this morning. I heard that.
Exactly. And so we don't just have everybody's name. We also know that there's an operation going on in Belgium, not in Brussels, outside. At this point, there's been some gunfire. There have been streets that have been closed off. It looks like the police are on to trying to find somebody that is in hiding there. And, of course, in Paris, they arrested somebody yesterday or last night that they think was planning to do another attack.
On the front page of the New York Times today, Ellen, they had a story that said that Belgium had ignored repeated warnings about this attack. Has there been anything else reported about that?
Well, what we do know, and Victoria Jones from our operation found this out by speaking to people, what we do know is that it's interesting that it looks like the agencies were not talking to each other, that they were withholding information. But if you recall, that's exactly what the 9/11 Commission found, which is why we completely transformed the way we collect and disseminate information between agencies. So this kind of turf war is not uncommon. It certainly was common before 9/11 in the United States, so 15 years ago in the United States, and we turned on a dime and really changed that dramatically.
What was interesting to me in reading that article is that it shouldn't have been a surprise, given the fact that they had terrorists fleeing from the Paris bombings into Belgium, and it shouldn't have been a surprise to those agencies. Is there going to be any early indication whether there's going to be political fallout from not being prepared for this bombing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously you had two guys that resigned to the prime minister. The prime minister would not accept their resignation. I mean, it's very hard to know what's really going to happen in Belgium politics and the fallout for this. Obviously, the European Union, which is a collection of countries, not states, needs to get it together in terms of the way they communicate with each other, and that is obviously going to come out of this, just like our 9/11 commission changed things dramatically after 9/11.
Anything else going on?
Well, sure. We also have Mr. Cruz going after Mr. Trump. Yesterday, Donald Trump tweeted out a picture of his wife, who obviously was a beautiful model star, and Heidi Cruz, who did not look so great. She's been known to have some depression, etc. And Senator Cruz said going after Heidi Cruz was not acceptable, going after family members was not acceptable, and so Donald Trump is getting some pushback from women and from others on that. I don't know how that's going to affect either the Wisconsin vote or, of course, California, which is the last one to go. On the 7th of June, I think. So, and there's a lot more in between there as well.
Didn't Donald Trump start this because there was a PAC in Utah that was running a nude picture of his wife when she was modeling?
Yeah, that's right. And there was a PAC. And, of course, Ted Cruz says that he has nothing to do with this PAC. It's just a question of what is going to stick at this point.
Ellen, I got this question, and you know, you look at the New York Times CBS poll, and we talked about this on the air yesterday with the listeners, and I talked about this on the air yesterday. You look at the New York Times CBS poll, and the two likely candidates for president, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, have such high negatives. Donald Trump, 57, Hillary Clinton, 52. Is this a problem with our process that we, you know, I got to believe Americans are out there saying, is this it? Is this who we're choosing?
Well, Americans are saying, is this it? Is this who we're choosing? But the fact is, I don't honestly know what America is going to do, nor do we actually know that Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. I mean, there are still people that believe that Bernie Sanders could be the nominee. There's still people that believe there's going to be a third-party candidate. This is an outlier year, for sure.
Ellen, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, and have a great weekend.
Thank you so much, and I'll be in South Sudan next week.
Ellen Ratner, she's on her way to Sudan, and she's our colleague at Talk Media News. We thank her every day. Talk Media News for checking in with us and letting us know what's happening nationally. Up next, we'll talk with Steve Cormier about an event that is happening this weekend. Well, Corm will let us know what's happening this weekend. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. I wanted sort of to throw it over to a Radio Vermont colleague here, Steve Cormier, and he wants to talk about the Radio Vermont Group Health and Fitness Expo that's going to be this weekend at the Berlin Mall. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Corm, I was wondering what does this mean? Do I have to weigh myself in at the Health and Fitness Expo?
You know what? Green Mountain CrossFit's going to be there if you need to work out a little bit. How's that?
I need to work out a little bit, Corm.
I'm not here to challenge you to any workout, believe me.
So what's this all about?
Well, we're doing this thing with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont and the Vermont Radio Group, obviously WDEV, along with our sister station, 101 The One, the Health and Fitness Expo. With media support from Optical Expressions. We can't thank both those sponsors enough. Without them, we would not be able to pull this off. Now, this is an event going on, as you mentioned, at the Berlin Mall tomorrow from 9 to 1. It's free. It's open to the public. We're going to have a bunch of different vendors there that might help you out. I know that people, you know, this day and age, a lot of people donate bone marrow. Rutland Regional Medical Center will be there if you have any questions about doing that. Some of the other vendors that will be there tomorrow, Onion River Sports, Soward, Vermont. This is a neat little business out of Morrisville. Makers of Pretty Band Sweat Pretty headbands and running skirts. If you're worried about your financial health, Lackey Financial Services of Williamstown will be on hand. The Swimming Hole, Where Water Lives in Stowe. It's a nonprofit community pool and fitness center. We're also going to have Central Vermont Medical Center on hand. The Gary Home and Westview Meadows, Grateful Yoga, as I mentioned, Green Mountain CrossFit. You know, it's a chance for you to come out if you have any questions to any of these businesses that could help you out. I'm sure a lot of people have questions about health insurance. And Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Vermont will be front and center answering all your questions there tomorrow. The other thing we're doing, Mike, is we have this brand-new 2016 top-of-the-line Boardworks B-Ray paddleboard. It's here at the station. Everybody's drooling over it. They want it. Paddle and leash and a roof rack. It's a $1,000 value. It's being given to us by Umiak Outdoor Outfitters. So come by, register to do that tomorrow, and we'll pull a name at the end of the expo, and someone's going to win that. Now, I'll be there for the one, our sister station, and Tom Beardsley will be representing WDEV. So once again, that is at the Berlin Mall Health and Fitness Expo tomorrow from 9 to 1. We hope to see you out there. Mike, hey, listen, if you want to take a ride, maybe you and I can lift a few weights.
I got a couple of questions that sort of popped into my mind. One of them, are you and Tom going to be wearing and modeling those running skirts?
You know what? You can't pay me enough, number one. Although I do love wearing shorts. You know what? If someone wants to make a $1,000 donation to a charity, I'll put a running skirt on.
And the other thing I have a question about, are they going to tell us what we have to eat at lunchtime?
You know what? That's up to us, I think. Mike is alluding to the conversations that happen at Radio Vermont during lunch.
I'm alluding to the food, too, because it isn't the healthiest sometimes. Again, Corm, where is it and what time?
It should be a great day. By the way, the weather's going to cooperate. It's going to be a beautiful day. Come on out. Berlin Mall. We're opening an hour early, by the way. The mall usually opens at 10. So we'll start at 9 o'clock tomorrow until 1 in the afternoon. We'd love to see a bunch of people show up. And obviously we have some great vendors that maybe can help answer some of the questions as you move forward here in life.
Corm, it sounds like a great event. The Radio Vermont Group Health and Fitness Expo at the Berlin Mall. Thank you so much, Corm, for the picture of the skirt is just in my mind, and I can't get it out.
But, yeah, I'm not shaving my legs, by the way.
Have a good day.
Yeah, see, Ken Squire made a mistake by putting me on the air. Thanks, Mike.
By putting both of us on. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. As I promised, I'm going to open up the phone lines. Tom, I'm going to open up the phone lines for a little while to get your opinions on two calls that we had yesterday. And I appreciate the calls, and I appreciate your opinions on various things. And these were calls that generated a couple of questions that I wanted to explore with you. And if you want to give us a call, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. There was a call yesterday that prompted a question, in my mind at least, that was very, very interesting. And that is, do we need term limits for Congress? The caller had mentioned that we need to change the culture in Congress, and said that the only way that they thought that it would change was to institute term limits. And I wanted to sort of put that out there. We didn't have a lot of time yesterday. I wanted to put that out there and get your opinions about, should we institute term limits for Congress? The number, if you have an opinion, is 802-244-1777 and toll-free 877-291-8255. And we also got a call yesterday, and the gentleman seemed to be upset, I guess is the word, about the shooting that took place in Burlington of a 78-year-old man who obviously had mental health issues. The caller called in and wondered whether the Burlington Police Department acted properly in the shooting death of this 78-year-old man who had obviously had mental health issues. And since then, a few people have asked me, couldn't they have just wounded the guy? Couldn't there have been some other way that they could have reacted? And from what I know and what I read in the press, the answer is probably no. I mean, I suspect that the officer really did fear for his life and fired that shot. And believe me, no police officer wants to shoot a person. You can't convince me that they want to shoot a person. And I got to believe they fired that shot, this young police officer fired that shot in defense of himself and his fellow officers. There is no wounding somebody in that instance. You shoot to stop the attack. You shoot to immediately stop the attack. And we'll find out about this, you know, because there is body cam video, and we'll probably get a definitive answer and an insight into what the situation actually was. But as I said yesterday, my question is not what happened. Well, my question is what happened the days or weeks following up to this event? Because once the police arrive, there are only four possible outcomes. There's a peaceable arrest. The gentleman who was distraught and obviously had mental illness could kill himself, commit suicide. He could hurt others, including police officers, perhaps even kill others, including police officers, or the police shoot him. Three out of four of those scenarios ends badly. It ends badly for everyone, especially the poor person who was shot. So in my mind, my question is, what was the response to this crisis before the police arrived? What was the mental health response? What was the attempt on housing and finding housing for this gentleman who was being evicted at the time? That's the question that I have. At what point could there have been an intervention to help this poor gentleman? Look, you're not going to find me bashing the police. They perform an incredibly difficult job and handle most instances with great respect, great pride, and professionally. And they aren't the bad guys. And I kind of dislike it when people try to paint them that way. We are grateful knowing that when we make that E911 call, when we make that 911 call, somebody is on the other end and somebody is coming for help. But with all that said, the Burlington Police Department, heck, all police departments, do need to review their procedures leading up to individuals with mental health issues. And they need to do that with all sorts of agencies. We had three shootings involving an officer, a police officer in Burlington in the last few years. Two of them dealt with people who had obvious mental health issues. And it's really easy to blame the cops in these instances because they are at the back end of this crisis. But it isn't the police. It's the system, particularly the mental health system, that failed a 70-year-old man. And while we're talking about public safety, just remember two people died in Jericho of carbon monoxide poisoning. Get CO detectors. Make sure the batteries are charged. And let's not have another one of these again. So what we're talking about today are two questions. One is, should we have term limits for members of Congress? And what do you think about the police shooting in Burlington? Tom, I know we have full lines. Let's go to the first one. You're on open mic. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
I was just talking. I thought maybe the term limits, I think it's a great idea. I think it's eight years, just like the president. And alternate so that you're not totally new House and Senate. So every 4 years, one House or the Senate is changed over. I think the people that get elected are going to have to be scrutinized more. I think that because I mean you're going to either end up with 8 years of really good service or 8 years of them trying to figure out how's the best way to get as much money out of the whole 8 years as they possibly can. As far as the Burlington police shooting. I heard the video that saw the video that actually you could hear the shots. I guess we don't really know until the body camera comes out, but I just find it hard to believe that I don't know how many officers were in there couldn't have grabbed and subdued a 78-year-old man. I don't care, you know, too nice, whatever. I worked as a bouncer for years, and there's things you can do, and I just thought it seemed like a lot of excessiveness, especially the number of shots I heard on the video. And I'll just hang up and listen.
Thank you for your phone call. Tom, let's continue on the line. Let's go down to the next caller. You're on open mic.
Hi, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, first of all, we'll touch base on what that gentleman just said. Hey, somebody comes at me with a knife, I'm not going to let them come at me with a knife. So if those officers had to shoot the guy, they had to. Also, what was the guy doing out in public? Maybe if he was under supervision, okay, in a home somewhere, none of this would have happened. Number two, on the term limits, absolutely. The Greeks had term limits, so should we. And we ought to get rid of these super PACs and these delegates. It should be the people's will and who the people want, the people's majority, who is president. Not how many delegates and all of these corrupt politicians who are in there. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much, Tom. I know the lines are, let's go to the next caller. You're on open mic. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to make a quick comment on the shooting. I believe they were able to take an unknown terrorist who was involved with killing many people and shoot him in the leg and apprehend him. And this is a 78-year-old man in Burlington, Vermont that I don't believe needed to absolutely die. And I'll take my answer off here.
Yeah, thank you for your phone call. Look, it's a difficult situation all around. I don't think, you know, if you're being threatened, trying to wound somebody is just not going to happen. I mean, I had somebody tell me they should have shot the knives out of his hand. Well, that happens in the movies. I'm sorry. That happens in the movies. That doesn't happen in real life. You just can't do that. If you feel threatened, you've got to shoot. And unfortunately, in this instance, the man died. Let's go to the lines. Tom, we have other calls on. Good morning. You're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Term limits? Yes, that's a simple answer. You know, this is always sad situations when it involves somebody with a serious mental illness, but there are nationally accepted protocols that police follow, including the 21-foot rule when somebody is displaying a deadly weapon. Again, yeah, you can't expect them to shoot a knife out of somebody's hands. They could have charged him with shields. I mean, if these things are going to change, they'd have to change on a national basis. But the thing is, one thing that people don't think about is that we arm the police. We give them special rights to create law and order in situations like this. And one of their first obligations is not to allow their weapons to be given up to a dangerous individual. So if they take a chance on wounding somebody, and that person suddenly disarms the police, now you've got a much bigger situation on your hand. I'm not playing devil's advocate here, because there really is no win-win here with a seriously mentally ill person. The other thing to consider is your radio station being in Waterbury. You take a walk around the sidewalks of Waterbury on any given day, you're likely to run into a gentleman named Louis Hines. Now, this person was also a paranoid schizophrenic, and there's a young lady who about 25 years ago was clubbed over the head at the top of Church Street and killed while just having her lunch on a nice sunny day because she cast a glance at this guy. I mean, these people are dangerous, and they're like... You know, they're more dangerous than a loaded gun sitting on a table, because you never know when they're going to spring into action and cause mayhem to some unsuspecting innocent person.
Thank you for your phone call. Tom, next up, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Term limits, yes, but you're talking about folks voting themselves or technically putting themselves out of a job, so I'm not sure that's ever going to happen. But as far as this situation with this gentleman that was shot, we continue to hear this thing of, you know, about, you know, what the last caller mentioned about, you know, shooting the gun out of somebody's hands. You've seen across the United States a number of police officers that have been shot and killed. I mean, that's, talk about a thankless job. I'm not sure, you know, what are we asking our officers to do? Dodge the first bullet before they, you know, shoot someone? You know, you take an example of this gentleman out in Orange the other day. You know, this guy fired off a gun into the air with a bunch of kids around. Yes, they managed to take this guy into custody after the standoff, but this character is notorious for, he fired off guns, you know, when the paving company was there a few years ago, and they confiscated some 74 guns from him or something like that when they finally did put him under arrest. I just think that, you know, we're asking a tremendous amount of our police force out there. You know, they're scrutinized, I mean, to the utmost. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm starting to feel, you know, where I didn't feel sorry for these officers in the past, I'm starting to feel sorry for them now, because I just think that they've got a very difficult job. And it doesn't seem as though the public is really behind these guys, especially with the types of individuals that we're hearing about that they've had to deal with in the, you know, last few weeks, months, year. So I'll hang up and listen to you.
Well, thank you for your phone call. I'm listening to all opinions. I sort of gave my opinion at the beginning of this. So let's go to one more phone call, because we need to get to Lisa, Lisa Lynn at Vermont Sports Magazine. Let's go to one more phone call, and you're on open mic. Good morning.
Oh, is that me?
That's you.
Oh, good morning. Yes, my name is Betty. I'm from Bay Area. On term limits, I agree totally. They should have new blood in there at least every 8 years. On the as far as the guy with the gun, I totally disagree with some of them, and some of them I agree with. The man is 78 years old. You got police officers that are in their early 20s or mid-20s. If you cannot handle a 78-year-old man when you're in your 20s, there has got to be something wrong. And you don't take a knife to a gunfight. I mean, come on. Has anybody ever heard that? You've got a knife, and you can't disarm a 78-year-old man, and you have to shoot him? I think they need to be evaluated themselves, these police officers. Either get more training or something is not quite right there.
Betty, thank you for your phone call, and thank you all for your phone calls. We'll explore this next week even more. I'll try to get some guests in, and we'll try to explore this question even more, because it is a fascinating question and one that we all have strong feelings on. Coming up, Lisa Lynn from Vermont Sports Magazine and more of your phone calls. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to welcome to Open Mic Lisa Lynn, editor of Vermont Sports. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm great. You know, as I was driving down this morning and it was pouring, I said, what am I going to talk to you about? But there are a lot of activities left in winter, isn't there?
Absolutely. And just the fact that you said those words, and that you also forgot to mention that I'm the editor of Vermont Ski and Ride magazine as well, makes me know where your head's at. And frankly, you know what? I don't blame you. I think when particularly when we live in the valleys, we tend to forget about what's going on up in the mountains. But I'll tell you what, this is actually my favorite time of year to head up to the mountains and ski.
And why is that?
For one, there's just an amazing vibe. Every single weekend from now until closing day, and that varies between resorts, is pretty much earmarked as a party. It's a time of year when we can experience what I think a lot of Colorado and California experiences year-round. You can sit outside on the deck. You can have a burger. There are tailgates going on after skiing. The snow is soft, and you can carve it beautifully. I love corn snow. And there's
so
just a ton going on. There's pretty much a party every single midway deck, every single on-mountain restaurant you come to has live music and something going on.
Sounds like Europe without going to Europe.
It does.
One of the things that I'm always fascinated about, Lisa, is that every year we seem to come up with a new way to enjoy winter. And one of the ways that I've seen that's growing in popularity are what are called these fat tire bikes. Have you seen the growth in that industry take off here in Vermont?
Absolutely. And Vermont is really, really well suited for fat tire riding. And there are actually a number of places where you can rent them, including ski resorts. So here in Middlebury, Rikert, which is a cross-country center, also runs fat tire bikes. And their trails are perfect for fat tire riding. And fat tire riding you can do on pretty much any terrain. For people who don't know what it is, it's essentially taking a mountain bike and putting the tires on steroids. And if you remember how much fun it was to ride like a big wheels when you were a kid, it's the same idea. It makes riding over kind of any terrain super easy. And a lot of these tires have big studded studs in them, so they actually grip on the snow. And it kind of makes you feel like a superhero.
And isn't that appropriate with Batman and Superman movie coming out? You can be a fat...
They should have Fat Tire Man.
That's right. Hey, you know, we see these new activities, whether it's a fat tire bike or, you know, now that's sort of an older activity, which is backcountry skiing. Is there some trend out there that we are seeing that maybe will be taking off in the next few years that you're sort of seeing out there as starting?
There's a huge trend right now in what I'm calling uphill skiing or randonnée skiing. And this year it was a really interesting example of how much that's taken off. So what this means is people are using types of skis that they would use for backcountry skiing. So these might be tele skis or skis where you can lift up your heel and then click it down, which are called randonnée bindings. And they're putting skins on the bottoms of their skis so you don't slide backwards, and then skinning up mountains. And this originally started as a way to get into the backcountry and to find, like, hidden powder stashes. Obviously, this year we don't have too many powder stashes, but people have found it's a great workout. It's a wonderful way to get up on the mountains when there might not be a lot of people up there. Stowe has had a series of uphill races on Saturday nights where they turn the lights on, the gondolier run, and people skin up. And this weekend they're actually having what's called a topsy-turvy race, where you skin up and then race back down. Fulton Valley also had a wonderful series. Sugarbush had a wonderful, amazing, really difficult mountaineering race where you skinned up, skied across, skied down, skinned up. So it's a really growing trend, and it's a great fitness sport as well.
I like the aspect of skiing down. I don't know how much I like the aspect. Don't they have lifts for that? To go up.
The more you skin up, the better you'll ski down.
Your latest
you have
edition.
To earn your
of...
turns, Mike.
Your latest edition of Vermont Sports had some of the best areas to go or things to do in terms of sports. Can you give us some examples?
Well, we did. We featured actually a really fun story about a couple who did a fat tire mountain bike ride out to Seon Lodge. Now, Seon Lodge is this amazing gem that many people may not realize is owned by the Vermont State Park System. And it's out in Groton State Park, and you can actually spend the night there. And increasingly, we're seeing more and more opportunities to do things like that. There's also great ice climbing that's been going on in the Notch, although that may be coming to an end right now. But There are plenty of things to do, particularly, I think, now in these shoulder seasons. We're starting to see the white water run, too, and people are already getting out into the rivers.
Let me ask you this. If we're sort of transitioning, and you're talking about a lot of great activities, any other activities, and then I want to transition how you transition both in your magazine and the content into the sort of spring and summer, but anything out there upcoming that you think would be fascinating for our listeners to either participate in or attend?
Well, this weekend there, you know, I mentioned the Topsy Turvy Derby. One of the things that I absolutely love to do, and I think you can do it whether you're religious or not, is to attend an Easter sunrise service on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there aren't that many times when we get up at dawn and actually climb or take a lift up a mountain, and Sugarbush has a beautiful sunrise service up at the Allen Lodge. Stowe has one up at their summit. Most of the ski resorts have some format of that.
And it's a really wonderful way to be out in nature, to see the mountains at a time that you might not have otherwise.
Hmm. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, when it was raining this morning and I was coming down, yeah, you're right. I'm not going to let you say that word rain again.
Look at the forecast and see that it's going to be 60 degrees and sunny both days this weekend. Get over the rain.
Okay. Let me talk about this. When do you start transitioning as an editor of a magazine of two publications, Vermont Sports and Ski and Ride, Vermont Ski and Ride magazine? When do you start transitioning to those sort of spring and summer activities?
I think increasingly we're seeing that you can do a number of activities into different seasons. So, for instance, we're actually working on a story for our April issue of Vermont Sports about spring in Killington. And Killington is one of the few places probably in the country where you can be competing in the Bear Mountain Mogul Challenge in the morning, then go perhaps ride your mountain bike, and then play a round of golf in the afternoon, all in the same day in April.
And one of the things that I'm fascinated, what you sort of do, you sort of transition to running and biking a lot in sort of summer activities. Will that be a concentration, or are there new sports that you're seeing out there for spring and summer activities that sort of pique your interest?
I think, biking and running are something that I think so many Vermonters do and love. And it's as much of an activity as a lifestyle, and it's how we stay in shape. There obviously are many different variations of biking and running you can do now, too, from trail runs to hashing is a topic that we've written about. We are focusing our next issue, our April issue, on what we're calling faster, stronger, and longer. And these are going to be very specific tips by some of the top running coaches and cycling coaches in the state on how to really improve and increase your time. And this is the time of year that I think people want to start getting those muscles back. Even if you've been working out all winter long, there are very specific muscles that you use, whether you're running or biking, that need to start getting trained. And we're not that far away from, say, the Vermont City Marathon, which is at the end of May, or some of the century rides, like the Grand Fondo, which starts in June. And we even have some of the gravel rides, which are starting as early as April.
Lisa, one of the, I thought was a wonderful essay, was about a cancer survivor. It's in your issue that's out on the stands right now. Can you talk a little bit about it?
So Karen Newman just is an amazing, amazing person. So she is a top triathlete, and she actually was, in the triathlon world champion. But she, for years, secretly struggled with bulimia, and her husband didn't know it. She taught nutrition. She was a nutritionist. Her clients didn't know it. And she raced all through it. And then she discovered that she had cancer. And going through cancer treatment, she decided that she was going to keep racing. And she did, and it gave her a real appreciation for life, and ultimately it helped cure her. And it's something that she's dealt with very, very well. She's written a book about it, Just Three Words, and we were really privileged to be able to tell her story in our current issue.
We're going to, Lisa, we're going to have her on Tuesday she'll be on the second part of the open mic. She'll be on from 10:15 to 11 o'clock. It will be Karen Newman, and we'll talk about her story. And her survivor, she's a cancer survivor, and she's a top athlete, top triathlete. Hey, Lisa, as always, I really enjoy having you on and you know, boosting my spirits about skiing, because
well, if you want to see, we have a terrific calendar of everything that's going on. We also if you sign up for our e-newsletters for Vermont Ski and Ride, vtsports.com or vtskiandride.com. We have two separate newsletters that really focus on telling you about what are all the fun activities that are going on each weekend.
Hey,
so,
Lisa,
I encourage people to take a look at those sites and subscribe.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll make this a regular appearance. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
That's Lisa Lynn. That's Lisa Lynn from two magazines. It was the Vermont Sports Magazine and Vermont Ski and Ride Magazine. I want to thank Lisa, and I want to also thank Senator John Campbell and Representative Don Turner for appearing on our program today. They did an excellent job, and of course, Lisa Lynn. We really thank them for being on. If you want to hear this broadcast or repeat this broadcast for yourself, just go on our website at wdevradio.com and click on the open mic icon. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the original Pioneer AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury, Vermont, and Montpelier, Vermont, and 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond, and of course, streaming worldwide at wdevradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. We'll talk again on Tuesday, and have a great weekend, everyone.